Welcome to Dead Souls Social Club.
Good evening, everyone. If you enjoy our show and find our research both interesting and informative, please can I ask that you consider leaving us a 5-star review on your chosen podcast platform. Something that small really does help us out a huge amount. You can also find out more about us and our work by heading over to deadsouls.co.uk and checking us out. We are a small team of 3 researchers with more than 70 years of experience between us. You can also find us and speak to us over on Instagram. Just search Dead Souls Social Club and we'll come up. So, as always, thank you so much for joining us tonight. This audio presentation contains graphic details of death, violence, and controversial subject matter. Listener discretion is strongly advised. From Dead Souls Media, this is Big Pharma. I'm Jamie Black, a researcher and psychologist, and I'll be your host for tonight. The term Big Pharma emerged as a shorthand in the mid-1990s to describe the powerful and often looked upon sinisterly global pharmaceutical industry. It's used to refer to the large multinational pharmaceutical companies and the pharmaceutical lobby. A notable Big Pharma conspiracy theory claims that pharmaceutical companies as a whole act in dangerously secretive and ominous ways that ultimately harm its patients. Well, take a seat, because here are the receipts.
Who do you think decides whether you live or die? Most of you would say it's fate. But in our world, a pandemic-ridden world, it's Big Pharma, a bunch of companies that make vaccines and medicines. They decide who lives and who dies. And that makes them dangerously powerful. Let me explain how. Omicron cases are rising. There is talk of vaccines and boosters. By all indications, booster shots will be a regular feature in our lives. And we know who stands to gain. Big Pharma, they're rolling in money, they're blackmailing governments, they're fueling inequity, they're setting arbitrary terms and conditions, jacking up prices, pushing secret deals, and yet we have little choice but to take their vaccines. That is the kind of power they wield, which is why I say, in today's world, Big Pharma decides whether you live or die.
The 19th century saw the rise of the modern industrialists. There was an explosion of inventions that would change the world. And the Industrial Revolution would also give birth to the billionaire class. The years between 1865 and 1902 would become known as the Gilded Age. The period was given this name in the mid-1920s by historians who called it this after inspiration from Mark Twain's 1873 novel titled The Gilded Age, A Tale of Today. Many of the business practices of the so-called robber barons were perhaps deemed necessary during the Gilded Age to conduct a business back then, but in many cases their actions were deplorable, even by the standards of their day. But there was one man who rose above all of his contemporaries to use politics, force, coercion, subterfuge, and manipulation, thus becoming the world's first billionaire. He was one of the most corrupt businessmen in history, increasing his wealth at the risk of the health and lives of his workers and fellow citizens. But he wasn't alone. That phenomenon still exists to this day. I'm talking about John D. Rockefeller. So who was he? How did he make his wealth and maintain it? And what did he do that would be considered criminal acts by today's standards? And how has his influence survived even through to today? John Davidson Rockefeller was born on July 8th, 1839 in Richford, New York. He became an assistant bookkeeper at the age of 16 and entered into the business world, making good investments and joining in important financial partnerships from the age of just 20. Rockefeller was a shrewd businessman from the get-go. Many of his business partners were connected to the Freemasons, although there's no evidence to suggest that Rockefeller ever became a member. With his own money and support from his family, he made a stake in the oil business, drilling, but primarily oil refining. Rockefeller founded the Standard Oil Company in 1870 and managed the company until 1897. By 1900, Rockefeller controlled approximately 90% of all the petroleum production in the United States. A huge feat. And his research teams created the first plastics and gasoline for internal combustion engines, bringing him into the sphere of Henry Ford, who became a close business associate of Rockefeller's. As well as Andrew Carnegie, the steel magnate, the three became business partners. In fact, the invention of the internal combustion engine created the need for gasoline, and Rockefeller essentially controlled the entire industry. He held a monopoly, with the United States federal government being his largest clients. The Sherman Antitrust Act of 1890 outlawed business practices that aimed to monopolize its relevant market, but Rockefeller managed to carefully avoid its tentacles. As a result, Rockefeller used his influence and money to lay the groundwork for a complete takeover of the healthcare industry too. He used his political contacts, who at the time were essentially on his payroll, for their elections. In doing so, Rockefeller had natural healing methods completely banned. He also arranged for doctors to be imprisoned, and both hospitals and clinics were threatened with being shut down if they did not follow his regimen. And this is how he did it, in an entirely legal fashion, in a free market America. You see, in 1901, Rockefeller established the Rockefeller Institute for Medical Research, which is now known as Rockefeller University. It is dedicated to advancing biomedical research, and it was instrumental in pioneering various medical treatments, including vaccines, antibiotics, and synthetic drugs. These synthetic drugs would become the cornerstone of the burgeoning pharmaceutical industry. Rockefeller spent $100 million of his own money, which equates to around $2.6 billion today. He used it to hire, train, and then deploy his doctors, clinical researchers, and chemists who would perform and follow his organization's guidelines and practices exclusively. Rockefeller banned traditional and natural treatments in favor of his company's new chemical and synthetic compounds. In 1902, he spent a further $1 million to fund the creation of the General Education Board. This was passed by Congress based upon entirely selective, fabricated, and misleading data, and pressure from Rockefeller on his friends in Congress, of course. Effectively, he lied in order to prevent medical colleges and universities from receiving federal grants if they did not abandon the teaching of natural healing, which had been standard practice up until that point. Rockefeller subscribed to social Darwinism. He was an open and vocal racist. He agreed with the views of Margaret Sanger, vehement campaigner for contraception and believer in eugenics. In 1909, Rockefeller selected Andrew Carnegie, the Irish-born steel magnate and founder of US Steel, to perform a national tour of hospitals and clinics to evaluate the current methods of treating illness and disease. Carnegie chose a former schoolteacher by the name of Abraham Flexner, who was neither a doctor nor scientist. Whilst Flexner was definitely not a physician or medically trained in any way, he was a wealthy owner and operator of a for-profit college in Kentucky. The result was the Flexner Report of 1910, which called for a centralized system of controlling healthcare in a pretty socialist move for the United States. But this would also create the age of big pharmaceutical companies and the American healthcare system that we know today. You see, up until that time, most doctors practiced holistic medicine, using natural remedies, herbs, and compounds to treat illness. As I mentioned, this had been the case and practice for many centuries around the world, and these treatments were highly effective. This remains the case today, that natural remedies and treatments are highly effective and sufficient treatments. Yet I bet that you are already thinking to yourself, is that correct? Surely this can't be the case. Well, natural treatments were not as profitable for a pharmaceutical company who were hoping to break into the very new and extremely profitable drug industry. Natural remedies were also not patentable and able to be protected as intellectual property. Anyone could cultivate the ingredients and prepare the treatments. There was no control over it. That just wasn't suitable for a monopolistic company, however. Rockefeller wanted to corner the global pharmaceutical market as he had done with his oil company. But to do so, he needed allies in the business all over the world. He started a fierce war on plant-based natural medications, which extended to condemning cannabis and cocaine, for example. The big pharma lobby, even today, spends billions in Congress to keep natural remedies off the market so that they can make profits on chemically created treatments, many of which aren't as effective or the data to support what they claim to do is slim to none. I'm not making this up. You see, part of the misleading data was the claim that Rockefeller's doctors had eradicated hookworm in the United States. This was touted as a major achievement at the time and done using their own medical compounds. But it was a complete lie. But the lie worked to get Congress on board. Rockefeller then spent $180 million more staffing his medical schools with like-minded sycophants who were reliant upon him for their livelihoods, replacing the previous faculties who were then blacklisted. Rockefeller even convinced his business associate, William Randolph Hearst, and Federal Bureau of Narcotics Director Harry J. Anslinger to conduct a media campaign against cannabis, creating a, quote, Mexican-sounding name, unquote, for it, which would allude to negative racial connotations towards the drug. Hearst and Anslinger referred to it moving forward in their media as marijuana, and the name stuck. Rockefeller created a non-profit that donated big money to medical schools that followed Flexner's advice. This in turn benefited his own growing chemical business. Once the competition was removed, Big Pharma could coerce Congress to condemn much cheaper, safe and proven remedies in favor of experimental and less proven, but cheaper to produce, and patented products. This is the core foundation of American Big Pharma, profit, not health. It's all about the dollars, and lives are simply cast aside. Rockefeller then began producing his own medicines with petroleum base note, which essentially means oil, a known carcinogen, many of these also being highly addictive. Though Rockefeller didn't particularly see this as an issue, he also ensured that traditional herbal treatments were then labeled as quote-unquote alternative medicines. And he lobbied and paid politicians for their views and opinions to have herbal and natural treatments banned as unscientific quackery, most of which had more actual scientific data to support their value than the chemical replacements which Rockefeller was producing. An example of this is the drug acetaminophen, known as paracetamol in the UK, Europe, and wider world. Clinical studies have evidenced that the drug, used to relieve headaches, is not as effective as natural remedies such as ginger, magnesium, curcumin, chamomile, and good old-fashioned H2O at relieving symptoms. Yet more than 100 years of belief in chemical-based drugs have convinced us that anything natural is weak at best and unlikely to be a true, effective resolution to our suffering. Media, propaganda, and marketing wield more power than most realize. Rockefeller also ensured that the insurance companies supported his guidance regarding his chemical medications and made deals to ensure that they banned payments for natural and holistic treatments. By working closely with the American media magnates Joseph Pulitzer and William Randolph Hearst, colluding with the most powerful newsmen of the day, who influenced millions of Americans, they spread the Rockefeller Big Pharma propaganda. The message was irrelevant to the media men. It was all about the profit for them. In fact, both had already evidenced that sensationalism and fake reporting was not beneath them and their organizations. Integrity, it seemed, had a price tag. In addition, Rockefeller also took over the American Medical Association, where he could control what was being taught in medical schools, and thus install his doctrine, which ultimately supported his own medical pill business, and in turn eliminate natural healing from the national pharmaceutical curriculum. Doctors and professors who challenged this new orthodoxy were fired, banned from teaching and practice in medicine, and their licenses were entirely revoked. Rockefeller could do this given how he either owned or had majority stakes in the hospitals, clinics, colleges, advisory bodies, medication manufacturers, pharmaceutical suppliers, and distributors. To give context to all of this manipulation by Rockefeller, once it was proven that many of his own manufactured medicines were causing cancer, he then founded the American Cancer Society and prevented any of that information from ever being disclosed to the wider general public, under the guise of being the leading and regulatory organization when it came to cancer research, care, and treatment. All while still preventing any natural remedies from being used by the medical industry. Within a single generation, through suppression of information in colleges and hospitals, the majority of doctors and physicians were only aware of the chemical treatments that Big Pharmaceutical, under the leadership of Rockefeller, pushed, and knowledge of alternative and natural remedies fell out of the medical sphere of understanding. They would be seen simply as quackery, historic, foreign, or primitive treatments. Now, Rockefeller, along with J.P. Morgan and Kuhn Loeb and Company, which later became Lehman, wanted to protect their newly obtained wealth. They all worked with Nelson Aldrich to create the Federal Reserve System in 1913 under President Woodrow Wilson, who was himself heavily financed by these men. In addition, they were instrumental in establishing a federal income tax despite their previous collective positions on this subject. In a display of irony, Aldrich's daughter was married to one of Rockefeller's sons. So why the change in their opinion? Well, simple exemptions. It should be noted that Rockefeller and his associates who first opposed the Federal Reserve changed their outlook once they were able to create tax-exempt foundations wherein they donate massive amounts of their corporate shares to not only avoid income taxes and capital gains taxes, but also estate taxes. The money saved then goes into lobbying Congress. Most, if not all, of the pharmaceutical companies and banks have since created these exemption foundations. See also Bill Gates. For all intents and purposes, Rockefeller and his business partners supported the creation of the Federal Reserve and thus IRS control of Big Pharma and healthcare, while still supporting the very legislature that created laws for which they were exempt from. Rockefeller was the godfather of this business move. Fun fact, Kuhn Loeb was run by Jacob Schiff, whose grandson married Al Gore's daughter in 1997. Families so famous in political terms that they are connected through to this day. Further, Salmon P. Chase became involved in 1930 when Chase Bank bought Equitable Trust Company of New York, whose largest shareholder was John Rockefeller Jr. This made Chase Bank the largest bank in the world, and Rockefeller the most powerful man in the oil and drug business. It certainly was a family affair. In 1939, Rockefeller created a business partnership with the German company IG Farben, the parent company of Bayer. It should be noted, and you guys listening to this are more than likely already aware, that the Nazi concentration camp Auschwitz-Birkenau was the largest mass extermination factory in human history. However, what few people are aware of is that Auschwitz was directly linked to IG Farben. IG Farben strongly supported the Third Reich. it was also complicit in the crimes of the Third Reich. The company took direct advantage of the absence of legal and ethical constraints on medical experimentation to test its drugs and chemicals on unwilling human subjects at the camp. The company also paid a retainer to SS physician Helmuth Vetter to test Rutinol and other drugs on deliberately infected patients at the camp. Further, physicians at Auschwitz infected prisoners with typhus in order to test the efficacy of anti-typhus drugs, resulting in an extremely high mortality rate among the prisoners. A senior IG Farben official oversaw the chemical factory in Auschwitz directly. IG Farben tested the pharmaceuticals on prisoners at Auschwitz who suffered from and had been deliberately infected with tuberculosis, diphtheria, and other such diseases. You see, when it came to the Holocaust, Rockefeller was just as complicit as his company and business interests. Otto Amburst, the IG Farben board member responsible for the Auschwitz project, told board colleagues on April 14, 1941, that their new friendship with the SS was a blessing. He also added, quote,
"We have determined all measures integrating the concentration camps to benefit our company."
And who was their major benefactor? That's right, John D. Rockefeller Jr. He was referring to the production of a pesticide called Zyklon B, which was being used on crops and as a household insecticide in the United States. But it was slowly being phased out due to health concerns amongst humans and animals. But SS doctors, such as Karl Brandt, found another very good use for it. Zyklon B was the extermination agent used in the Nazi gas chambers. After the Second World War, IG Farben was dissolved and rebranded as BASF, Bayer, Hoechst, and Sanofi Aventis. The medical industrial complex employs roughly 1,100 highly trained federal lobbyists today, more than two for each member of Congress. The Center for Responsive Politics estimates that the drug companies spent $280 million on Capitol Hill in 2017 alone, a 12% increase over its 2016 spending. They also poured more than $58 million into the 2016 election, splitting their interest between Republicans and Democrats, entirely hedging their bets. Today, the Rockefeller Empire, along with J.P. Morgan Chase, owns 50% of the big pharma industry in the United States, with the U.S. alone accounting for more than 50% of all global pharmaceutical sales within the industry. In fact, big pharma is the second largest manufacturer of products following the military-industrial complex, and all in order to make even greater profits. In the 1990s, Big Pharma started moving their manufacturing overseas in order to benefit from cheap labor while still increasing the cost of medications and treatments. Most important drugs are now produced in India and China entirely. With millions of Americans unable to afford healthcare and a simple trip to the emergency room having the potential to cause bankruptcy, the US healthcare system is in need of CPR. Big Pharma, as it is today, was forged over a century ago by deceitful and corrupt businessmen, hell-bent on capitalist domination, and no one has stopped to correct the issue since. Maybe the industry is too far gone to unravel it and start again. Maybe bigger change is needed. Millions upon millions of average Americans head to the polls every 4 years and pin their hopes for a better society on the latest presidential candidate who offers to stop corruption, improve the lives of the average American, lower taxes, stop illegal immigration, and a dozen other hot political topics. But none of the candidates ever suggests putting an end to the power and grip of the big industry oligarchs who are at the core of the nation's largest issues. Just a short episode tonight, guys. But that's because we have a few episodes dropping this week. On a side note, if you haven't already done so, please consider joining our Patreon. We drop episodes there that we cannot release on mainstream podcast platforms, and we host our most controversial episodes there. It costs just $2 a month, which is cheaper than the cost of a cup of coffee. And for that, you get access to exclusive Patreon-only episodes, articles, blogs, research material, and more. Head over to patreon.com/deadsouls to sign up. We can't wait to see you guys over there. Good night, everyone.
Thank you for taking the time to listen to our show tonight. Be sure to leave us a 5-star review on your chosen podcast platform and subscribe to our show so that you never miss an episode. Our shows aren't sponsored by any company or corporation, so any support you can give us goes a long way in supporting the work that we do. From all of us here at Dead Souls, sleep tight.